Ellen Duncan, and the Proctor's Daughter, The Works of William Carleton, Volume 2. Ellen Duncan. There are some griefs so deep and overwhelming, that even the best exertions of friendship and sympathy are unequal to the task of soothing or dispelling them. Such was the grief of Ellen Duncan, who was silently weeping in her lone cottage on the borders of Clare, a county at that time in a frightful state of anarchy and confusion. Owen Duncan, her husband, at the period about which our tale commences, resided in the cabin where he was born and reared, and to which, as well as a few acres of land adjoining, he had succeeded on the death of his father. They had not been long married, and never were husband and wife more attached. About this time outrages began to be perpetrated, and soon increased fearfully in number. Still Owen and Ellen lived happily, and without fear, as they were too poor for the marauders to dream of getting much booty by robbing, and their religion being known to be the old religion of all, in a warfare that was exclusively one of party, they were more protected than otherwise. Owen never was particularly thrifty, and as his means were small, was generally embarrassed, or rather somewhat pinched in circumstances. Notwithstanding this, however, he was as happy as a king, and according to his unlettered neighbor's artless praise, there wasn't a readier hand, nor an opener heart in the wide world, that's for he had ID but he hadn't, and more was the pity. His entire possessions consisted of the ground we have mentioned, most part of which was so rocky as to be entirely useless, a cow, a couple of pigs, and of the ULD cabin, which consisted of four mud walls, covered with thatch, in which was an opening, to let in the daylight, and to let out the smoke. In the interior there was no division, or separate apartment, as the one room contained the cooking materials, and all other necessaries, beside their bed, which was placed close to the fire, and, of course, nearly under the opening in the roof. If anyone spoke to Owen about the chances of rain coming down to where they slept, his universal answer was, "Sure were nigh either sugar nor salt, anyhow, and a drop of earth rifle of wind, was never known to do anybody harm, barring it brought the typhus, but God's good, and orders all for the best." Owen had been brought up in this way, and so he could live by his labor, he never thought of needless luxuries, and Ellen, seeing him contented, was so herself. For some months previous to the time of which we write, Owen's affairs had been gradually getting worse and worse, and it was with no pleasing anticipations that he looked forward to his approaching rent day. His uneasiness he studiously kept a secret from his wife, and worked away seemingly with as much cheerfulness as ever, hoping for better days, and trusting in Providence. However, when within a week of the time that he expected a call from the agent, he found that with all his industry he had been only able to muster 5.20 shillings, and his rent was above £5. So, after a good deal of painful deliberation, he thought of selling his single cow, thinking that by redoubled exertion he might after a while be enabled to repurchase her, forgetting that before the cow was sold was really the time to make the exertion. A circumstance that greatly damped his ardor in this design was the idea of his wife's not acquiescing in it, and one evening, as they sat together by the light of the wood and turf fire, he thus opened his mind. "Ellen," asked Thor, "it's myself that's sorry I haven't a fine large cabin, and a power o' money, to make you happier and comfortabler than you are." "Owen," she interrupted, "don't you know I'm very happy? And didn't I often tell you, that it was the will of Providence that we should be poor? So it's sinful to be wishing for riches. Bud, Ellen Acushla, it's growy and worse wid us every day, and I'm afeard the trouble is going to come on us. You know how hard the master's new agent is, how he sold Paddy Murphy's cow, and turned him out, because he couldn't pay his rent, and I'm afeard I'll have to sell Black Bess, to prevent his doing the same wid us." "Well, Owen Agra, we mustn't murmur for our distresses, so do whatever you think right, times won't be always as they are now." "Bud, Ellen," said he, "you're forgetting how you'll miss the drop of milk, and the bit of fresh butter, for when we part with the poor baste, you won't have even them to comfort you." "Indeed, and for I do miss them, Owen," she answered, "sure it's no matter, considering the being turned out of one's home into the world. Remember the old saying of, out of two evils always choose the last, and so, darling, just do whatever you think is for the best." After this conversation, it was agreed on by both that Owen should set out the next day but one for the town, to try and dispose of the cow, the crather, and although poverty had begun to grind them a little, still they had enough to eat, and slept tranquilly. However, it so happened, that the very morning on which he had appointed to set out, Black Bess was seized for a long arrear of a tax that had not been either asked or paid there for some time, and driven off, with many others belonging to his neighbors, to be sold. Now you must know, good reader, that there is a feeling interwoven, as it were, in the Irish nature, that will doggedly resist anything that it conceives in the slightest or most remote degree oppressive or unjust, and that feeling then completely usurped all others in Owen's mind. He went amongst his friends, and they condoled with one another about their grievances. There was many a promise exchanged, that they would stand by each other in their future resistance to what they considered an unlawful impost. When the rent day came, by disposing of his two pigs, and by borrowing a little, he was enabled to pay the full amount, and thus protract for some time the fear of being turned out on the world. Some days after, the whole country was in a tumult. Daly, the proctor, was found murdered in the center of the high road, and there was no clue perceptible, by which the perpetrators of the crime could be discovered. The very day before, Owen had borrowed the gamekeeper's gun, to go, as he said, to a wild, mountainous part of the country to shoot hares, and from this circumstance, and his not having returned the day after, a strong feeling of suspicion against him was in the minds of most. In fact, on the very evening that we have represented Ellen sitting in tears, the police had come to the cabin in search of him, and their report to the magistrate was, that he had absconded. His wife was in a miserable state of mind, and her whole soul was tortured with conflicting emotions. Owen's long absence, as well as his borrowing the gun, seemed to bespeak his guilt, and yet, when she recollected the gentleness of his manner, and his hitherto blameless life, she could not deem him so, no matter how circumstances seemed against him. But then, the harrowing idea that it might be, came in to blast these newly formed hopes, and her state of suspense was one of deep and acute misery. She was sitting, as we have said, alone. The fire, that had consisted of two or three sods of turf heaped upon the floor, had almost entirely gone out, the stools and bosses were tossed negligently here and there, and the appearance of the entire apartment was quite different from its usual neat and tidy trim. Her head was bent a little, and her hands were clasped tightly around her knees, while her body was swaying to and fro, as if the agitation of her mind would not allow of its repose. Her eyes were dry, but red from former weeping, and she was occasionally muttering, "No, he can't be guilty, Owen commit a murder. It must be an untruth." And such like expressions. Gradually, as she thus thought aloud, her motions became more rapid, and her cheeks were no longer dry, while the light that entered through the open door becoming suddenly shaded, she turned round, and raised her tearful eyes to question the intruder. She sprang eagerly forward, and hung on his neck, for it was Owen himself, while she joyfully exclaimed, "Oh, heaven be praised, you're come back at last, to give the lie to all their reports, and to prove your innocence." "Ellen, my darling," he answered, "I knew you'd be glad to get me back," and he kissed again and again her burning lips. "But what do you mean, Acushla? What reports do you speak of, and of what am I accused?" "Oh, thin, Owen, I'm glad you didn't even hear of ID, and the police here searching the house to make you prisoner. Sure, Avik, Bill Daly, the proctor, that sazed poor Black Bess, was murdered here the very morning you went to